You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire, 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Tēnā koutou katoa, ko Jessica toku ingoa, no mai haere mai ki te Wire mō tēnei rā. Kia ora and welcome to The Wire for Rāpare Thursday, our last show of the year. My name is Jessica and I'm your host today. I'll be with you for the next hour. Whai Akine coming up on the show, news teamers Kate and Sophia and digital news sub-editor Joel talk to protesters who marched from the Auckland Domain to the ACT Party's Epsom office last week against the government overturning Aotearoa's world-first anti-smoking legislation. I speak to Chair of the Meningitis Foundation, Gerard Rushton, about why all people, particularly those aged 13 to 25, should also be protected against meningococcal. And this week we are bringing you the best of The Wire, recapping the year that was in news and current affairs. Hei aha o whakaaro. I would love to hear your thoughts on any of these pieces today, so get in touch. Tuku pātuhi mai, text in on 5395, or Wire Mai Rane, give us a call in the studio on 309-3879. I'm all by myself today, so let me know what you think of the news that happened this year. What were your most memorable news events? I'd love to hear from you. Ka oa e wari wari e ahe ana koutou te whakarongo ki ene kororo. Ano he pakihiri roki roki maarunga i te pai tuku tuku o irirangi poho. Mi haere ki 95 BFM ira katikom. And you can catch all of these stories and more by podcast on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com.
It upsets me so much that there's still people that we need to convince this is a real fucking thing. Real friggin' thing.
Wire. Last week, protests were held in Auckland and Wellington regarding the National-led government's reversal of an amendment to the Smoke-Free Environments and Regulated Products Act 1990. The amendment, implemented in 2022 by the then Labour government, would significantly limit the amount of retailers who would sell smoked tobacco products from 6,000 retailers to 600, and would ensure that those born after the 1st of January 2009 would be prohibited from buying tobacco products. The Auckland protests saw hundreds gather outside the Auckland Domain, marching to the ACT Party Epsom office. 95BFM reporters Sophia Roger Williams and Kate Walker were at the scene, having discussions with attendees regarding the reversal of the smoke-free amendments. Sophia started off by asking co-organiser of the protest and junior doctor, Donald Mayo, about what inspired them to hold this protest.
What motivated me to organise this? Well, I mean, I'm a bit of a public health nerd, so all of those things like smoking and the impact that that has on people has always been one of my interests in medicine, but I just saw what the government was going to do, and they didn't campaign on this at all. It came out of nowhere when the coalition formed, and I was just kind of outraged by it because I've seen firsthand people die. You know, I've seen the light go out of people's eyes from lung cancer, from heart attacks, which are all driven by cigarettes. So that was sort of the main impetus. And I was like, surely there are other people, other health workers, other members of the public who are outraged by this as well, because no one has asked for this. So I found them. You know, there's this great, the Union of Doctors, heaps of doctors in there, Health Coalition Aotearoa, they were all sort of planning on organising something. So I sort of just jumped in there and helped them out with all of it, yeah.
And what do you hope to achieve from today's protest?
I mean, we just want to tell the government that they can't go through with this. They are acting against their own interests in doing this. They're wasting $46 billion of taxpayer money in the next 20 years, and they are killing 8,000 people in the next 20 years by repealing this. So we want to tell them that, you know, no one wants this. 63 or 4% of national voters don't want this, so they shouldn't do it. And it's such an easy thing for them because they just have to not do anything. They don't have to do anything. They just have to not touch what the legislation already says. Yeah, so that's the main thing we're hoping for.
And what other initiatives do you plan on doing going forward if the goals for today aren't met?
If the government goes through with repealing this legislation, they would have lost the trust of hundreds, if not thousands, of doctors, nurses and allied health professionals. And I think they'll be punished for that in the polls. They'll be punished for that by the New Zealand public, by young people. I think all of these groups will be really outraged if they go through with this. They will see their own whānau dying as a result, especially in our low-income areas, in Māori communities and Pacific communities. And I think this government will be punished for that in the polls and in the next election.
Kate talked to Marnie Wilton, co-founder of Vape Free Kids New Zealand, a volunteer-run grassroots organisation who was also in attendance with her two children.
What motivated you to come protest today?
We are absolutely outraged at the government's move to repeal the smoke-free. We're really angry. This is about our kids' health. We shouldn't be putting profits, tobacco company profits, ahead of our kids' health.
Sophia also asked David Littelli, retired professional boxer and founder of Butterbean Motivation, otherwise known as BBM, about what he hopes to achieve from the protest.
Well, look, we have to let them know that the power of the people still exists, right? And we have to stand together, stand united, and make our voices be heard. You know, they cannot continue to do this. This is an absolute disgrace, what they're trying to do. And it strikes at the heart of everything that we try and do in our community, which is help our people live healthier lifestyles. This is an absolute disgrace. You find me a respectable doctor or a health professional that thinks this idea is a good one. You know, you'll be struggling to find one.
Multiple other attendees told 95BFM about the importance of advocating against the national-led coalition government's plans to lessen restrictions on tobacco products.
My name's Lewis. I'm an organiser with the Nurses Union, the NZNO, and I'm also the co-convener for Unions Auckland. We're here today because the government is trying to repeal smoke-free legislation. We think that's unacceptable. It's an attack on Māori. It's an attack on Pacifica. It's going to make our healthcare workers' lives immeasurably harder already in a healthcare crisis, and it must stop, and we're going to keep fighting until we win.
Māori are most afflicted in the population from cigarette smoking, vaping, and so I'm out here so that the government can consider the repealing of the Smoke Free Act. It's terrible. It will just kill more people that don't need to die.
Well, there's this pro-smoking legislation they're trying to push through. Over 25 years, we've led the world in anti-smoking. Highly successful. We're the leader in the world in this. And this is about to stop. And it's going to result, as we found out today, in 8,000 deaths a year. It's just disgusting, you know.
Mayo urges for people to get involved.
First of all, follow us on our Instagram, protect.smokefree.nz, and you'll be seeing all the updates we've got. I think the next campaign is going to be direct letter writing to MPs. So I'm writing to your MPs with a personalised letter about how smoking has harmed the people in your lives and how you think that it's an insane, stupid, dumb decision to repeal this legislation. And writing that to your local MP and to the health representatives. So Dr. Shane Retty, who's the health minister, and then the lady that he's passed this on to sort of run, the associate health minister, Casey Costello, writing to the two of them, writing to another GP in the National Party, Dr. Vanessa Wienink. These are the people who have all committed, you know, to doing no harm as doctors, and they're doing the opposite of that right now.
That was Joel, Kate and Sophia reporting on the Auckland Smoke Free March that took place last week.
For old time's sake, yes or no, would you like to be leader of the National Party at some point?
No, I'm just focused on what I'm doing. I'm one of those people that do it day by day, job by job.
I'll save this clip and come back to it in 5 or 10 years. We'll see how it's aged. The Wire.
And, of course, a big event that happened this year is that Christopher Luxon not only became the leader of the National Party, but the Prime Minister. So that's quite funny to have that sting there. That was just from last year. The Meningitis Foundation is calling on the government to increase funded meningococcal vaccination programs to eliminate meningitis in New Zealand. I spoke to the chair of the Meningitis Foundation, Gerard Rushton, about why all people, particularly those aged 13 to 25, should be provided with subsidised protection against meningococcal. I started off our interview asking Rushton about what meningococcal is and who is most likely to be affected. Here is that interview.
Meningococcal disease is transferred between people, and it mainly affects two areas that it affects mainly. That's infants and adolescents. And 70% of our cases presently are Māori and Pacific.
Can you tell us about what vaccines are currently available in Aotearoa to protect against meningococcal, and who's eligible for subsidies on these vaccines?
There was a program introduced in March last year for that put men B free on the immunisation schedule for under 12 months, and a catch-up for 12 months to 5 years, and also for adolescents 13 to 25, but particularly those that are going to
first year halls of residence, boarding schools, army barracks, and prison. So that's who are currently receive a free vaccination, and that's really part of our messaging at the moment, is that we've seen a dramatic increase in the uptake of the vaccine since it was made free for the 6 months prior to it becoming free in March. Under 12 months, we only had 422 people vaccinated. For the 6 months after March, when it became free, we had 51,376, which is really amazing. And, I mean, in those 12 months to 5 years, the figures went from 912 to 122,550. So, but it actually alarmingly pointed out that the band for adolescents is too narrow, because the increase there only went from 808 to 9,600. So that's actually telling us that the restriction around the vaccination for adolescents is too narrow, because we've seen people have really sent a strong message that they want this vaccine, but if they're going to have to pay for it, they just cannot afford it.
So we have this catch-up program that's currently available for all people that are in close living situations, but this expires in February next year. Can you tell our listeners a bit more about this catch-up program and who might be eligible for it?
Yes, well, it's anyone that's going into first-year halls of residence or boarding schools. So we really urge anyone that's looking at going into those situations to get vaccinated. But more importantly, we're putting pressure on PharmAc and Health New Zealand and the government to actually widen that range so that anyone that in that age group is actually eligible for a free vaccination, because, as I said, we've seen the uptake of the under 12 months and 12 months to 5-year-olds. It's just been amazing, but really restricted in that youth age group, mainly because of cost.
Yeah, and then do you have an idea of how much it does cost to get these vaccines if you don't meet the subsidy criteria?
Anywhere between $300 and $450. So it is quite expensive. You know, it's a basic right that we think that every New Zealander should be entitled to a free vaccination. And gosh, we really encourage. We've got a petition in front of PharmAc at the moment to make it free for everyone.
Just lastly, why is it so important that we extend the eligibility for specifically the meningococcal B vaccine?
Because, as I said, we've seen a need for in the other age groups. The uptake has been really amazing. You know, going from for the age band from, as I said, from 12 months to 5 years, went from 912 vaccines to 122,000, and whereas we've only seen the adolescents one go from 800 to 9,000. So yeah, really important. I mean, the adolescents is another high risk age group. They're a highly social group. They're interacting together. So we feel it's really important that they are not discriminated against by having to pay for this vaccine.
That was the chair of the Meningitis Foundation, Gerard Rushton, discussing how we can eliminate meningococcal in New Zealand. And the catch-up program currently available for all people in close living situations, not just those in first-year halls, expires on the 28th of February 2024, and the foundation is encouraging people to get vaccinated if they are eligible.
Scientists have finally found the clitoris.
The Wire.
We'll be right back after this short break. Keep it on the B.
What's a 7-letter word for street fighter? Brawler. Hey, what's happening at Ponsonby Social Club this week?
DJ Oren.
And tomorrow,
DJ Carisco.
Same old Ponsonby Social Club, 152 Ponsonby Road.
DJ Hallitau has hit the decks. And hold up, they have just taken their number one beer and remixed it into a fresh new banger. The new number one low-carb beer from Hallitau. Snappy, sparkly, sunlit, and sure to keep you refreshed and dancing this summer. 98% carb-free. Number one low-carb lager. It's the remix. Now pouring at Halitau and available via their web store, halitau.co.nz.
Take the stress out of Christmas with Tiger Drops Holy CBG Hemp Oil. Plus, you get a free 15ml with every 30ml purchase. That's two Holy CBG Hemp Oils for the price of one.
Tiger Drops are not intended for consumption or for the treatment or prevention of any disease or condition. Sales support judicial review of CBD consumption in New Zealand. For more info, head to tigerdrops.com.
Merry Christmas! What did Santa bring everybody?
Wow, some undies. Thanks, Santa.
Wow! A Leica M11 monochrome and a range of professional quality lenses. Santa, you're the best!
No, wait, why did you get a better gift?
I asked Santa for it. What did you ask for?
World peace?
Whoops.
Ding dong merrily on high. Find all the photography ding dongs you need to make your Yuletide gay at ProGear. Open now at 3 Railway Street, Newmarket, or go to progear.co.nz.
Hi, Mum. Yeah, happy birthday for the other week. Yeah, I'm fine. I'm just calling to let you know I'm going to be performing live on BFM. Yeah, with my band. No, my new band. Yeah, I have got a real job. That doesn't mean I can't still... Journalist is a real job. No, Mum, BFM. It's not just for students. It's like cool, alternative. Yeah, well, I hate you too. See you never, Mum.
Every Friday, live music direct from 95BFM Drive. Friday Live on 95BFM. Thanks to Parrot Dog Bear.
Fantastic.
Great.
Super.
The best of The Wire on 95BFM.
Welcome back to The Wire. We're going to get into some Best of The Wire moments. Enjoying all your texts letting me know your favourite news moment of the year. Someone said that they're enjoying Nicola Willis's parliamentary quotes, so I've got one for you now.
How big is his hole? And do...
That is not in the public interest, I can assure you.
The Wire.
Last month, Te Kahui Tika Tangata, the Human Rights Commission, released a fact sheet explaining the connection between human rights titiriti o waitangi and co-governance. Professor of Law at the University of Auckland, Claire Charters, says the fact sheet helps unpack co-governance arrangements in Aotearoa and how they are consistent with a modern liberal democracy. Producer Bev spoke to Professor Charters about this and how co-governance arrangements could better reflect titiriti and the rights of Indigenous peoples. She began by asking about the importance of co-governance to New Zealand's democracy.
So co-governance is important as an expression of Indigenous peoples' self-determination under New Zealand's human rights obligations internationally. It is important because it also gives some effect to, albeit in a very light way, titiriti or waitangi, which, as we all know, is a sharing of power arrangement under Article 2 and Article 1, particularly in the Reo Māori text of the treaty. Co-governance is also important because it can be a valuable tool in addressing inequality. Inequality between peoples, so as a result of the imposition, sort of illegitimate imposition of power by the colonial government back in the 1840s onwards, and also at an individual level. So research from Harvard under what's called the Harvard Project for Indian Economic Development has shown that Indigenous peoples do better on socioeconomic and other indicia when they have self-determination and can manage their own responses to their own issues. So that's really important as a sort of practical reason as well. It is also, but I think it's also potentially very important for a liberal democracy where you need to protect the rights of the minorities. New Zealand has an extremely unusual, I guess, constitutional structure and democracy in that there's no formal and robust protections of human rights in our laws. So that is in distinction to, for example, Canada, the US and most European democracies, Western liberal democracies too.
So we would call this a social democratic approach to human rights, do you think? Or is there a decolonial aspect to co-governance?
Definitely there's a decolonization, I guess, flavour to it, in the sense that you're trying to realise the rights in te tiriti te o waitangi. And that pre-colonial arrangement in te tiriti te o waitangi is a sharing of power. I'm not sure that it's especially a sort of social democrat response, maybe in the sense that it can address inequality between peoples, but that is also a liberal idea, and certainly what is more of a liberal idea, sort of a libertarian idea actually, is that the state should stay out of people's lives as much as possible, right? So to the extent that co-governance is realising authority vesting in the people, and state out, it is actually very much a liberal idea. So I'm not so sure on the social democratic perspective, but I guess, yeah, on the inequality part, probably.
Can you explain for our listeners the relationship between co-governance and human rights in Aotearoa?
Sure. The right to self-determination and the right to autonomy and the right to sharing governance powers is enshrined in New Zealand's international human rights obligations. And that, again, is a very liberal idea. Human rights are very liberal in flavour of the state staying out to maximise the freedom, I guess, of individuals and also groups. It is also a way to realise particularly our right to culture, to the extent that, for example, in the Uruwera example or in the Whanganui River example, it allows tikanga Māori into the governance of, in those cases, the river and the forest. It also, as mentioned before, is a way to realise equality between peoples. So when, which is obviously a fundamental human right, right, the right to equality. So to the extent that it can address inequalities on a socioeconomic and other levels, it is clearly a reflection of, or not so much a reflection of, a way to manifest and achieve equality between individuals and peoples to some extent.
Is our current co-governance arrangement holistic, and does it honour te tiriti in your opinion?
Is it holistic? Well, no, because it's not, I guess, covering all of the places and spaces where Māori, I think, should and could be exercising co-governance. And it's not done on a sort of macro level. It's not part of a fulsome policy around co-governance, right? It's quite piecemeal, so not holistic in that sense, or certainly not comprehensive. Does it realise te tiriti o waitangi? Not in the sense that te tiriti o waitangi effectively allows for ongoing sovereignty of Māori and our rangatira Māori, as the retention of tēnā rangatiratanga and then sharing that authority with the Crown. Co-governance is something much less than that, in the sense that the Crown retains its ultimate authority and can withdraw co-governance whenever it likes. It's part of either legislation or policy made by government. So it doesn't, I guess, challenge at all that assumption of full sovereignty by the Crown. So not fully, but maybe it's a step in the right direction.
With that being said, how could our co-governance arrangement better honour and reflect te tiriti o waitangi and the rights and needs of Indigenous peoples and communities?
I think you can have co-governance being more comprehensive. I think you could establish arrangements that where there's a real power sharing, so that these arrangements are constitutionally not dependent on the Crown's benevolence, if you like, so that there is, you know, this fundamental constitutional sharing of jurisdiction. I think that there could be this realisation and this implementation of policy and law that really provides for Māori authority over the social services that we provide to ourselves, so be that in a really meaningful way, health, education and so on. And that's not to say that in those sort of social places, socioeconomic places and spaces, that there couldn't be shared jurisdiction, or indeed more broadly. In fact, that would be appropriate, I think, in a bicultural and multicultural nation. But it should start on the premise that there is the shared sovereignty, and that is equal power or equal authority, at least in some places and some spaces.
That was Beth speaking to Professor of Law at the University of Auckland, Claire Charters, about the connection between human rights titiriti and co-governance.
Is it too late in the process, though, to change that?
Nothing's too late, bro. Everything's made up in politics.
The Wire.
For the first time in its 50 years of operation, this year the US Human Rights Campaign declared a state of emergency for LGBTQIA+ people, but transphobia and anti-queer legislation has also been felt here in Aotearoa. Jack from Rainbow Path NZ, an advocacy group for the rights of rainbow refugees and asylum seekers, spoke to producer Caden about how misinformation prevalent in the US directly impacts our own queer communities.
When you see a backlash in any other country, it does impact on people here in Aotearoa. A lot of the backlash currently from the US that you mentioned is against trans people, and you can see on online forum and within the community that it highlights the level of vulnerability of the community. And that's also because people know that some of the misinformation that happens here in Aotearoa comes from overseas. There are some direct links between misinformation and disinformation that fuels a backlash in the US and the experiences of trans people here. You don't have to look very far to see US speakers, US fact sheets, other US so-called research appearing on websites or in interviews with groups campaigning against the rights of trans people here in Aotearoa.
Do you think Aotearoa's laws are up to scratch to protect people from having their rights taken away?
If you think of the rights of rainbow people in general here in Aotearoa, even then it's important to make distinctions. Like, it's clear that sexual orientation is a protected ground of discrimination in the Human Rights Act. And while the Human Rights Commission has always said that trans and intersex people are protected under the ground of sex, the backlashes internationally have questioned the extent of that protection. And there's been an absence of guidance from government agencies, schools, workplaces often, about actually what it means that trans and intersex people are also protected under the Human Rights Act here. So unfortunately, even though there is protection, there hasn't been guidance that means that people actually know and feel that they are protected, and a significant proportion of trans people don't feel that all trans people are protected under the Human Rights Act and don't feel that they would personally be protected if they were discriminated against. Many of the rights that rainbow people have here aren't necessarily available to someone who comes here and is on a temporary visa because they've come as an asylum seeker or they're a convention refugee. You can't even change your name in New Zealand until you're a resident. And often people aren't aware that, you know, someone who is here as a refugee has the right to health, has the right to access public health services. So I think while we haven't had yet legal backlash, the removal of existing rights, we have quite a while now had the questioning of what those rights mean for people, and people fear that that may have an impact on them being able to access services, especially when there's already a gap in being able to access them.
Is New Zealand a safe place for trans and intersex refugees?
A tiny, tiny, tiny percentage of rainbow refugees, including trans and intersex people, who are fleeing persecution in their own countries, ever manage to leave. The vast majority will never be able to leave their countries. So the most important thing that any of us can do is support rainbow groups in those countries overseas to stand up for their rights, to fight for those rights, and just to support each other on the ground. Because most people will be staying there, or if they manage to flee somewhere, it'll be to a slightly safer place in their own country or a slightly safer place just across the border. New Zealand accepts very, very few refugees compared to many other countries around the world. And rainbow people are less likely to be able to get here. They're less likely to be able to travel, to have documents that mean that they can travel safely here. They're less likely to be able to feel safe to tell a refugee agency overseas that they need to get, that they're under attack. They're less likely to feel safe if they're in a refugee camp or if they're hiding in the community somewhere. So the first message is that if we want to support people in other countries, support the communities in those countries, whether it's Uganda, Kenya, who are standing up for their rights, and also support the activists fighting against the backlash, because that helps prevent it having a negative impact on us as well. And be in solidarity with the other groups. Trans and rainbow people aren't the only groups under attack in the US right now. There's attacks on sexual and reproductive rights. The thing that makes it easy for a political backlash is when there is fear and misinformation in the community, and so the wider community believes the politicians and thinks somehow that there's a moral panic and blames and scapegoats, trans people, rainbow people, and other groups. You know, we see it happening to migrants, to immigrants, to refugees, to Māori, to Pacific people, to black people in the US. Like that scapegoating of a community for political gain happens all around the world. And then we get to really practical things, like your question about, okay, if someone is one of the few people who manages to come here as a trans or intersex asylum seeker or refugee, is it safe here? When someone first makes contact with Rainbow Path, when they arrive here, the first thing we say to someone is, you are safe. You are safe. And that's because if something happened to them while they were here, we probably would be able to make a complaint. We could probably, you know, try and wrap some love and support around them. They are not fleeing for their life in the way that they have had to flee from persecution overseas. But apart from that, we can't say, look, there's all this support for you here, because there isn't. It is very, very difficult, especially when people come as an asylum seeker. There are huge gaps in support available for asylum seekers, convention refugees, and also quota refugees who come here. So all of those people who are concerned about the awful plight of so many rainbow people around the world, you know, Rainbow Path always will say, try and support people in their country of origin. And yes, we need to come together as rainbow communities and wider communities here to actually make it not just safe once someone gets here, but actually livable, sustainable for someone once they're here. I was recently listening to presentations from rainbow people from the Ukraine, and in that they talked about, in the midst of fighting there, that they are not just not, they're organising not only for rainbow people in their country, but they've created places that people can come together for other people who are displaced, have lost families, who didn't have access to food. I would love to see that Aotearoa finds a way to, you know, that people come together and push back against the misinformation that's coming from the US, and that is feeding campaigns against trans people here right now. And we just say, look, we don't need that sort of negative attitudes. We're a different sort of country, and that too becomes a beacon of hope to other people who get a sense that it's not inevitable. Right-wing politicians doing campaigns based on populist fear and misinformation, if we can stand up to that, we can show that actually when people care about the rainbow people in their families, people care about the rainbow people in their schools, the rainbow people in their workplaces. And when someone starts repeating the misinformation that's coming from overseas, including the US, if people can just go, did you check the source? Are you sure about that? How would you feel if that was your child? And things like that. I think some of that is equally as important is, of course, standing up for better legal protection.
That was Caden speaking to Jack from Rainbow Path NZ about how anti-LGBTQIA plus laws in the US impact us here in Aotearoa.
Well, what a phenomenal thing for you to say.
The Wire.
Couldn't agree with more, Winston. And we'll be right back after this short break. Keep it on the B.
Nab yourself some B-merch before the end of the year at the 95BFM pop-up shop.
We've restocked your favourites, including the BSA merch. You know, the rude one.
Plus, we have a limited edition Save the Bee t-shirt. A great way to subtly show that you helped save the bee. What a hero.
And the limited edition drive tee crafted by the talented Callum Rooney.
Pop-up shop is open now until midnight Thursday, December 21. Go to 95bfm.supershop.nz or head to the 95bfm website to check it out.
The summer 2023 edition of Art News Aotearoa is now in stores. New Zealand's leading contemporary art magazine is here to make a splash with the 200th Art News release. Featuring an exploration of iconic moments from the last five decades of art and culture in Aotearoa. As well as simply brimming full of art stories to keep you cool this summer. Only $15 from all good art stores or online at artnews.co.nz.
Ta-da! Merry Christmas. Here, open your gift. It's transformational.
Better not be another lordship.
No, think fresh, think seasonal, think botanical delight.
Oh. Is it your homemade perfume?
This year, give the gift of transforming anyone's front door into a cellar door with Boutique Connection. Choose from 3, 6, or 12-month subscriptions of New Zealand's finest artisanal small batch wines. You can also include a bouquet of seasonal flowers from White Tree Floral Design. For more info, head to boutiqueconnection.co.nz.
Hey, can I borrow your bedazzler?
Why?
My clients don't have enough dazzle. I want to look like a jewelled fantasy.
Have you just been to the new Gualpei exhibition at Auckland Art Gallery?
I've been 5 times. How'd you know?
Become a member of Auckland Art Gallery Toi O Tāmaki from as little as $75 per year and have free, unlimited entry to exhibitions like Gualpei, Fashion, Art, Fantasy. For more information, go to aucklandartgallery.com.
The original
originator.
95. Go to 95bfm.com for show podcasts.
It's fucked.
Yeah, it is.
The Wire.
Welcome back. You're tuned into The Wire on 95BFM. And we're bringing you the best Wire coverage of the year, recapping the year that was in news. Here we have our next piece by Castor. In the lead-up to the election, ACT and New Zealand First, in particular, campaigned on removing or reducing the impact of Te Tiriti or Waitangi in politics after the government announced their policies made under coalition agreements, which include reviewing the principles of Te Tiriti. Producer Castor spoke to Professor of Māori Studies at the University of Auckland and Chair of Te Runanga a Iwi or Ngāti Kahu of the Far North, Margaret Mutu, about the government's obligations to Māori.
A lot of the policies promised are aimed at Te Tiriti and trying to limit its influence on politics. Are these politicians required to follow treaty principles, or is it more of an option for them?
In terms of the treaty, that was the agreement, that was the legal basis upon which British immigrants could come into this country. This government, or the particularly ACT, and to a certain extent New Zealand First as well, is trying to do away with the treaty. We need to be quite clear about that. So David Seymour in particular has articulated in the run-up to the election his wish to see the treaty gone and to see there being no recognition at all of Māori as the indigenous people of this country. His take on it is that everybody is equal, no one's different in any way from anybody else. What this does is it takes back policy in this country back to the 1960s. And in the 1960s, there was a very well-known report called the Hun Report that said that Māori had to evolve to become brown Pākehā, and the only thing in the Māori world that was allowed to survive was whatever Pākehā said could survive, and that was things like arts and crafts, kapa haka, but not much else. This coalition government, at the behest of ACT in particular, but also with the support of New Zealand First, is trying to take us back to that. Now, is the government at all obliged under the treaty? Of course it's obliged. This country, the whole setup of this country, is supposed to have been done out of the Treaty of Waitangi. Without the Treaty of Waitangi, the whole political infrastructure you have at the moment would not exist. So it's as fundamental as that, because the treaty is part of the constitutional basis of this country. And the other, the parent document to the treaty is He Haka Putanga o Te Rangatiratanga o New Tereni, which is the 1835 Declaration of Independence. So in short, the answer to your question is yes, of course, they must abide by Te Tiriti o Waitangi, the treaty that was signed and agreed to between the rangatira of the hapu and the Queen of England.
While ACT has expressed intent to get rid of Te Tiriti, particularly from David Seymour, New Zealand First has instead promised to remove or replace all mention of treaty principles in existing legislation. Is this in line with the government's obligations under Te Tiriti?
Absolutely not. Now, this is, of course, something that New Zealand First has been trying to get across the line for at least a couple of decades. And what has always been said is it's just the principles that they want to get rid of. However, when Winston Peters came to the University of Auckland to talk to us about this, we did ask him quite specifically whether it was the principles he wanted to get rid of or whether it was the treaty itself, and he wouldn't answer the question. So I think you can safely assume that New Zealand First wants to get rid of any reference to the treaty in any form, in any legislation. And that is a massive violation of the treaty. It is as bad as David Seymour's attempt to just completely wipe out the treaty. They have the same aim in mind.
The government has promised to remove all Māori names from government organisations not explicitly related to Te Ao Māori, with Winston Peters particularly focused on waka kotahi, asking, how can you have a waka on the road? I'd like to ask you, can you have a waka on the road?
Winston Peters is not a speaker of Māori, and waka actually just means a vehicle. And a waka can be on the sea, on the land, it'll be a car or a truck or a whatever else. So, sorry, Winston, you don't know the meaning of the word waka. It just means a vehicle, so, a means of transport. So, yes, you can have a waka on a road, and we have heaps of them. Mm. On the naming of government departments, there isn't a single government department that is actually compliant with Te Tiriti or Waitangi and has at its base things Māori. Tikanga Māori, Māori law, there is not a single government department that does that. And I find it quite disingenuous that they use Māori names, so this might be a little bit unusual, but I happen to agree that that using Māori names for government departments is wrong. What they're often trying to do is fudge what those departments do. The classic one is Oranga Tamariki. Now that, Oranga Tamariki means the well-being of children, the health and well-being of children. That is not what that department does. It is the Ministry of Children, and it treats children abysmally. It cannot call itself something to do with the well-being of children. So that's a classic example. But I happen to agree with New Zealand First on that one. Change them all to English names, because they are English, they are Pākehā departments.
Lastly, do you have anything you'd like to add on?
The two coalition agreements are really, really clear that this is a government that is very anti-Māori. And it's going to systematically strip back, so it says, every single means of progress, every single benefit that we have been able to fight for and get over the last three decades, they want to strip the whole lot away. And that for Māori is unforgivable, and it's just not. It has made a lot of Māori leaders very, very angry. So I've been fielding a lot of phone calls from Māori leaders as to what we're going to do. You will have been hearing a lot of Māori leaders being interviewed and very, very angry about what's being done in the health sector, what's being done in local government, what's being done in terms of prisons, right across the sector. This is a huge backward step, and Māori are very angry.
And that was Kester speaking to Professor of Māori Studies at the University of Auckland, Margaret Mutu, about the government's plans for Te Tiriti in politics.
That was The Wire.
Ko ira te hotaka katoa, mō tēnei wiki te mihi ki a koutou katoa, i kōrero mai ki o mō tēnei rā. That's a wrap on The Wire for Rāpere Thursday, our last Wire of 2023. Thank you so much to everyone who spoke with us this year, and to our amazing news team as well. They are all volunteers, and they put in so much hard mahi to deliver the news to you. So thank you so much to all of you. Ni ra hoki te mihi, ki a koutou e whakarongo ana. Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to 95BFM.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.